Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Ganga Maya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaura Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutala. Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Devi. Gauravani Pachani Nirvisesa Sinyani Paskacha De Satani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So June 14th, 2011, Hilo, Hawaii, Skype class. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 10, Text 17 and 18. We'll recite Text 17. Sita Tapacham Jagraha Mukta Dhamma Vibhushitam Ratna Dandam Guda Kesha Priya Priya Tamasyaha
Priya Priya Tamasyaha
Sita Tapa Chamjagraha Mukta Dhamma Vibhushitam
Mukta Dhamma Vibhushitam
Ratna Dandam Guda Kesha
Ratna Dandam Guda Kesha
Priya Priya Tamasyaha
Priya Priya Tamasyaha.
Soothing umbrella.
Soothing umbrella.
Jagraha.
Jagraha.
Chukka. Mukta Dhamma.
Mukta Dhamma.
Decorated with laces and pearls.
Decorated with laces and pearls.
Bibhushitam. Embroidered. Ratna Dandam. With a handle of jewels. Guda Keshaha. Arjuna, the expert warrior or one who has conquered sleep. Priyaha.
Priya.
Most beloved.
Most beloved.
Priyatamasya.
Priyatamasya.
Of the most beloved.
Of the most beloved.
Ha.
Ha.
So he did. Translation and purport for 110.17. At that time, Arjuna, the great warrior and conqueror of sleep, who is the intimate friend of the most beloved Supreme Lord, took up an umbrella which had a handle of jewels and was embroidered with lace and pearls. Purport. Gold, jewels, pearls, and valuable stones were used in the luxurious royal ceremonies. They are all nature's gifts and are produced by the hills, oceans, etc., by the order of the Lord, when man does not waste his valuable time in producing unwanted things in the name of necessities. By so-called development of industrial enterprises, they are now using pots of gutta percha instead of metals like gold, silver, brass, and copper. They are using margarine instead of purified butter. And 1/4 of the city population has no shelter. Going on to text 18. Udava satikishchaiva vyajane paramadbhute virikramanya kusumai reje madhu pati pati. Udava and Satyaki began to fan the Lord with decorated fans, and the Lord, as the master of Madhu, seated on scattered flowers, commanded them along the road. I'm reading text, we'll read text 17, 18 together then. Sanskrit again for 17. Sita tapatram jagraha muktadama vibhushitam ratnadandam gudakesha priya priya tamasyaha. Udava satyakishchaiva vyajane paramadbhute viriryamana kushumai reje madhupati pahi. At that time, Arjuna, the great warrior and conqueror of sleep, who is the intimate friend of the most beloved Supreme Lord, took up an umbrella which had a handle of jewels and was embroidered with lace and pearls. Udava and Satyaki began to fan the Lord with decorated fans, and the Lord, as the master of Madhu, seated on scattered flowers, commanded them along the road. So, one sense we could say, okay, this is God. He's sitting on flowers. He has an umbrella that has a handle made of jewels that's embroidered with pearls. And that's real pearls. Today you can't get real pearls very easily. You get something called cultured pearls, which means they take a large bead, stick them inside of an oyster shell, and when it has a thin coating of sucre, then they take it out and call it a pearl. Very, very difficult to get natural pearls, which the oysters form themselves over little grains of sand. If you get a natural pearl, you have to pay a fortune for it, but it's hard to find anyone who even sells them anymore. So in one sense, we could say that this is the opulence of God. But Srila Prabhupada is making the point here in the purport that such opulence used to be available to all of royalty. And in fact, there's many purports where Prabhupada talks about the great opulence of the former ages of the earth. So today we cannot imagine even a very, very wealthy person having an umbrella that's embroidered with genuine pearls and a handle of jewels. Maybe the wealthiest people on the planet, you know, a handful of people, 10, 15 people on the planet who can afford this kind of wealth. And this kind of wealth is happening with great pain and suffering. The people who are mining the diamonds, the people who are diving for pearls, the people who are mining for gold, they are digging deeper and deeper with more and more pain and suffering to find less and less and less of these items. The people working in the mines often get diseases or die and are horribly exploited. But here, Prabhupada says that these things are naturally produced. In another purport, Prabhupada said they'd be just lying on the surface of the earth. And there was so much profusion of them that when Arjuna went to collect wealth for a sacrifice for his brother, he found just hills of gold and jewels that had been donated to brahmanas at the end of a previous sacrifice, and the brahmanas had just left there because they were so heavy. Now that was the extent of material wealth. And Prabhupada wrote the first canto Bhagavatam before he came to the West. And Srila Prabhupada in 1977 talked about how he'd become so disgusted with India that he didn't want to return. And here Prabhupada is giving his disgust. As Srila Prabhupada, who came from Goloka Vrindavan, where there's opulences far beyond ordinary pearls and jewels, where there's living jewels. The Christian writer C.S. Lewis, in one of his children's books, I used to read a lot of children's books when I was a Gurukul teacher, to review them for the students. So C.S. Lewis, in one of his books, talked about a realm where jewels were alive. But actually that realm exists in Tamani Prakrasatmashu Kalpa Viksha Lakcha Briteshu Suravi Abhipalayantam Lakshmi Sahasra Satasam Brahmase Vimanam. Chintamani. Chinta means conscious. Money means jewel. Right? Conscious jewels. Conscious jewels. Conscious pearls. Here, mukta means pearl. Money also can mean pearl. Chintamani. So Prabhupada comes from a world where everything is covered with conscious jewels. The Goswamis describe how when Lalita sings, the jeweled platforms around the base of the trees melt and then they reform into different shapes. But in fact, jewels are so plentiful that they're not of much consequence. And Krishna prefers sometimes to wear garlands, necklaces made of just forest flowers and gunja berries rather than diamonds and pearls, which are just everywhere. They're the dust of the path. Right? The dust in our path is mostly, you know, it's unwanted. It's unwanted. It's organic matter, little bits of skin and things like that. So Prabhupada comes from that realm, and perhaps Srila Prabhupada also was present in previous ages in the material world to see the opulence. You can hear his disappointment and disgust. Prabhupada uses the word disgust when he talks about what's happened to India. When he says here, they're using pots of gutta percha instead of gold, silver, brass, and copper. So I looked up gutta percha. It's a natural latex from trees that hardens, and it can be molded into various ways. So now we use artificial resins. In fact, we have a number of exhibits made of dolls of resin, and we even have some worshipful deities, like in Honolulu, made of resin. So gutta percha is a naturally occurring resin. It's not artificially. It's not made from petroleum. It comes from the sap of certain trees, like a kind of latex. It's used in chewing gum. It's also used in root canal work in dentistry because it's a very inert substance. It's also used as an insulator in electrical wires. And obviously it could be formed into pots that would harden and even look like they were molded in different shapes. Gutta percha was also used in India at one time to simulate carved wood. Again, now we're using resins from petroleum to do that. So today you can buy artificial marble, artificial carved wood made from petroleum-based resins. And then they were starting to make this out of gutta percha. And Prabhupada was noticing, you know, instead of actually having embossed metal that was made with probably with the lost wax process, with people actually carving and then pouring the metal, they were using this latex. They talked about using margarine instead of ghee. Of course, you can't exactly use margarine instead of ghee for deep frying. But I remember when I was growing up, people were thinking margarine was healthier than butter. Now we've discovered that butter is much healthier than margarine. And many places these, hydrogenated oils are being banned. And then he says, 1/4 of the city population has no shelter. That's a lot of people who are homeless. That's a lot, 25% of a city being homeless. I'm not sure in what city Srila Prabhupada wrote this. I believe he wrote the first canto, Bhagavatam, in Vrindavan and in Delhi. So I'm assuming that he's referring to Delhi, although perhaps he's referring to his home city of Kolkata. Of course, this is happening more and more in the modern times as things are going on. So this was written probably in the 1950s or 60s. But as we find now in 2011, homelessness has increased, artificial foods have increased, fake items, as I was saying, you know, you could buy fake marble and fake wood. I have a new office here and I'm looking for some furnishings, and almost everything is fake. It's made to look like wood or made to look like metal, but it's all just some artificial imitation that doesn't last very long. After a while, it looks really lousy, and when you compare it to the real item, there's no comparison. So Srila Prabhupada's making the point here, as he makes many, many places, that when one is God-conscious, the material side of life is also blossoms. You know, we often make the mistake thinking that to be Krishna conscious, the material side of life has to be falling apart. But all throughout Srila Prabhupada's books, he's making the point that if people are God-conscious, then materially they'll be so much more prosperous. We're very proud of our prosperity at the modern time, especially those of us in America or in Western Europe, Australia, New Zealand, westernized places of the world. But what is our advancement? Our advancement is almost all fake things, imitations, which are making us ill and polluting our environment. And people's physical and mental health is not what it was. People's relationships are not what they were. I mean, I remember when I was a child, I knew one divorced family. And now, so many people that I know, divorce, remarriage, or one boyfriend, one girlfriend. And people have a much harder time relating to each other, getting along with each other. They have a much harder time staying healthy. You know, we're proud of an increased lifespan, but so many people are dying in their 50s and 60s, and it's not even surprising anymore. And if you have a long lifespan, then your old age is often full of terrible diseases. So, okay, you're living till you're 80, but what kind of life is it? So we're so proud of our modern advancement, but it wasn't that long ago when people had real advancement. And it's evidenced in the pages of the Bhagavatam. So how did they have real advancement? Priya Priya Tamasya. They were the beloved of the most beloved. Madhupatihi. Madhupatihi can mean many things. It can mean he who killed the demon Madhu. It can mean he who is the lord of honey, of sweetness, and also he is the lord of springtime. So to be the beloved of the most beloved. So the most beloved person, Krishna, the greatest friend of all, he wants to give opulence to those who love him and whom he loves. That's natural. The people that we love, we naturally want to give good things to. If the woman loves her husband, she wants to give him tasty food to eat and a clean house to come home to and washed and ironed clothes to wear, if she loves him. If a man loves his wife, he wants to give her beautiful clothes and flowers and ornaments, a beautiful house to live in. He wants to give her children, if he loves her. It's just normal. If you love your children, you want to give them nice clothes and tasty, healthy food and wonderful toys to play with. Nobody has to tell you to do it. You don't have to read a relationship manual. You don't have to get some advice from elders. If you have affection for someone, then naturally you want to give them as wonderful things as you can possibly afford. Those of us who have deities, we want them to be on a beautiful altar. We want to pick fresh, fragrant flowers for them. The temple president of our Brooklyn temple said that since he's been in charge, he has spent over $1 million just on flowers. And he always makes sure the flowers are fragrant, right? Our modern-day breeding, they breed flowers that look nice but aren't fragrant. Although Nectar Devotion says it's one of the offenses to offer flowers without fragrance. And most beautiful clothes for the deities, made of silk, covered with beadwork, beautiful ornaments. So it's natural. If you have a friend, you want to get them gifts. You want to provide for them. Anybody that you have affection for and who has affection for you, where there's a mutually reciprocal relationship of affection, you want to give everything you can to that person. It's not like it's some kind of rule or some sort of formula or something mechanical. It's not even something that you think about. And it's not something you feel resentment about. Oh, I got to do this for my husband. I got to do this for my kid. Oh, I don't want to. As soon as there's affection, naturally that's there. So the reason everything was opulent in those days is that the planet was full of those who had affection for Krishna. As we go back through the ages, the percentage of the population who had some genuine affection for Krishna increases and increases. To the point that in Satyayuga, people didn't even have to engage in agriculture. Everything was just provided. I mean, we see a little bit of that still here in Hawaii. I remember when I was on Oahu, my son-in-law, who grew up in Hawaii, he took me to a place where people live under a bridge. So you might think, well, that's not very nice, living under a bridge. But the people who lived there didn't need any money. They had the water running under the bridge, clean, pure water, flowing down from the mountains. And all around them were fruit trees. There's one devotee here on the Big Island who told me she lived for a year on Kauai without buying anything. She lived without any money. She learned how to climb up the coconut trees, and she would pick the coconuts and pick the avocados. She'd sleep on the beach. She said when it was cold, she'd sleep in a cave, bathe in the ocean, bathe in the rivers. She said she actually gained weight during that time with just eating nature's gifts that were available. So there was a time when the whole planet was like that. When the whole planet, the weather was nice, there were fruits and flowers and vegetables that the earth produced. Fruits and flowers and vegetables, and jewels and pearls and metals. And everything that one would need was produced without endeavor, just naturally. Okay? So that's the effect of having affection for Krishna. But that's not the ultimate effect of having affection for Krishna. That's a very inconsequential effect. Right? This verse that we're reading today, especially the Priya Tamasya part of this verse, it reminds me of Krishna speaking to Arjuna, because this is, of course, today's verse is about Krishna and Arjuna. Bhagavad Gita 4:3, one of my favorite verses. Sa evayam maya tejya yoga prokta paratana bhaktosi me sakha cheti rahasyam yeta uttamam. Bhaktosi me sakha cheti, sakha, friend. That very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you, because you are my devotee as well as my friend. And then therefore understand the transcendental mystery of this science. So because Arjuna is Krishna's friend, sakha cheti, sakha cha, you're also my friend. You're not just my devotee, bhaktosime, because one could be a devotee without being a friend. One could be a devotee just officially. Well, if I worship Krishna, I'll get gold and jewels. I'll get my food. Certainly you will. Yoga kshema vahamyaham. Krishna will personally supply his devotee, even his sakama devotees. Krishna is even supplying the living entities who are rebellious and in the bodies of animals. What to speak of the sakama devotees? What to speak of the neophyte, nishkam devotees? But those who are friends, and what is Krishna going to give? Rahasyam. Rahasyam, something that's very secret, a mystery. Is going to give the real mystery, uttamam, the transcendental mysteries. Not only to be happy materially, how can one have as far as one can be happy materially, but also to reveal to one the mysteries, the secret mysteries, the transcendental mysteries of the universe. The essence of everything. So, of course, Krishna is wanting to have this friendship with everyone. It's not that Arjuna is some sort of privileged elite, that he has access to this friendship with Krishna, to enter into the mysteries of creation. But no, Krishna wants this with everyone. Bhoktaram yagatapasam sarvalokamahesham suranam sarvabhutanam. Suridam, sarvabhutanam, all living entities, I am the friend. Not just the friend, but surid, priya. He is the most dear. Most dear. He says even his super soul, he's the witness and the most dear friend. The greatest well-wisher. So much so that his servants, Prabhupada would sign his letters, your ever well-wisher, wanting what is really best for the living entity. Every living entity. Every living entity. Who can be a friend like Krishna? Iswara sarvabhutanam rajesha arjuna chistati ramayam sarvabhutani yantra rudani maya. that as we travel on this machine due to our desires, as Krishna explains in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that according to our desires, as we travel on this machine, Krishna stays in our heart. Who does that? Who stays right next to someone who's envious of you? And Krishna can smell one's desires like one can smell the aroma of a flower. And what are the desires of the conditioned soul? They're nasty things. We desire harm for others and pain for others. We have hatred, of deep hatred and envy of God. And knowing that, you know, sometimes you're with somebody who hates you and envies you, but you're not aware of it. Later you find out and you become disappointed. But Krishna is aware. He knows. He's not fooled. He always knows the truth. He's in the heart. And still he loves. Still he's the best friend. Nitya nityanam chaitanya chaitanam eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman. He's giving everything that everyone desires. Of course, the conditioned souls have to work for it and earn the karma for it, but he gives everybody everything they desire. And if you want something, he'll give you guidance as to what to do to get it if you don't deserve it immediately. What a friend. And Krishna's provided. He is Atmarama Aptakami. He doesn't need anything. He doesn't need anything. But he manifests eternally the spiritual world where he relates with each devotee, as Lord Kapila Dev says, in the form in which they want to worship him. He appears as they want to see him. He relates with each living entity perfectly. And he makes each living entity feel that they are his favorite. Sanatana Goswami says in Bihad Bhagavatamrita that each of the cowherd boys is Krishna's favorite. He feels that way, and he actually is. Krishna sits in a circle like a rainbow. He in the center is red and the outside violet. Each concentric circles with all his cowherd boys. Each cowherd boy is seeing and feeling Krishna's looking at me and I am Krishna's favorite. Krishna loves me the most. Krishna is dancing with each cowherd girl. She doesn't see that he's dancing with everybody else. Billions and billions of cowherd girls, and each cowherd girl sees Krishna's just dancing with me. When the gopis spread their own bodily perfume cloths on the soft sand and make a wonderful seat for their beloved, and Krishna sits by each of them sees Krishna's only sitting with me. Each queen thinks Krishna's only staying in my house. Even each of us in this world as conditioned souls, we think Krishna's just in my heart. We feel Krishna in my heart. I can have a deity of Krishna in my house, who's my beloved. What a friend. He manifests the whole spiritual world to instantly and immediately and fully fulfill everyone's desires on every level. And he manifests the material world, where everyone can get their desires fulfilled in illusion. He doesn't need to do that. You know, the modern Christian's idea of God is that anybody who doesn't like him or who's envious of him is eternally suffering in a lake of fire. But no, anyone who doesn't like Krishna, they eternally can live in the material world where they can dream that there are this and there are that and have everything they want in an illusion and taste as many things as they want, life after life after life. Oh, you want to taste this? Oh, you can taste this. You know, the woman's upset. Why do I have to listen to a man? Okay, you can try to be a man. Right, the man is envious of how a woman can control things through her beauty. All right, you can be a woman. Envious that the tiger can kill their animals, their prey, and be fearsome and control others through fear and power. Okay, taste what that's like. Be a tiger. You can taste everything. Taste what it's like to be a god. Okay? Just reading that, the Prabhupada saying how that after this life you can become a dog or a god. He said, of course most people are becoming dogs. But you want to taste what it's like to be a god. You can be Brahma, controlling a whole universe, and everyone worshipping us as God, and Indra, or great Rishi, so much power. We can create a planet. We can control the universe and fly through the universal sky. Whatever we want to taste, that's what kind of a friend Krishna is. No envy. He's no envy. He's not afraid that somebody can challenge him. If somebody challenges him, it's just a sport for him, like Varaha fighting with Hiranyaka. He's giving everything we want. We are fools, of course, as conditioned souls. We don't know what we want. But that is Krishna's friendship. So first we should appreciate Krishna's friendship. If we want to be in a position like Arjuna, first we have to appreciate Krishna's friendship. And then we have to be a friend. So how can we appreciate Krishna's friendship? On the most gross level, we can appreciate how Krishna is providing for us, how he's taking care of us, how he's sheltering us. We can see his hand in things. We can see how actually he's taking care of us. You know, modern sociologists and psychologists, they have made the point that how we interpret reality is not reality. And we can choose how to interpret reality. Of course, we say this in the Hare Krishna movement, that we have four defects: imperfect senses, cheating, making mistakes, and being illusioned. But generally, we think that those imperfections apply to somebody other than me, and that how I perceive the world is how the world is. There's a famous story, I don't know if it's a true story, but it's a fable perhaps, of this family that kept a mongoose as a pet. And one day, the baby was sleeping in the room, and the parents were working outside. When they came into the house, they saw that the baby had blood on him, and the mongoose's mouth was covered with blood. So in anger, the father killed the mongoose. Later he saw that there was a dead snake, and that the snake had tried to attack the child, but the mongoose had killed the snake and protected the child. So this is a very simple example of how our interpretation of events may be different from what they are. We can look at our life and we can interpret our life to say that Krishna has been very cruel to us. So many times we've become sick or injured and had so much physical pain and so much physical disability. All the persons in our life who appeared as enemies, who've tried to hurt us in some way, to speak ill of us, the people who prevented us from getting what we want, who somehow have stood in our way, and we thought, if I could just have this thing that I want, then I would be happy. All the difficulties with government. Perhaps we haven't had as much money as we wanted. We haven't gotten to live where we wanted. But we think of our life as a story, and we see the difficulties, and we may think, oh, Krishna's been very cruel to me. Krishna doesn't love me. He's not my friend. I'm serving him. I'm doing so much for him. And yet, what is he doing for me? Or we may see our spiritual advancement and think, I've heard this from many devotees, if Krishna really wanted me to be a pure devotee, why doesn't he just walk in front of me and show himself to me? Why doesn't he make it easy? Somehow interpreting our life that Krishna is cruel. Also, some things I hear is that, well, will surrender means that I have to be miserable. So, somehow painting Krishna as a cruel person and interpreting things like that. So to see Krishna as our friend, it requires for us to make a conscious effort to change how we interpret our life. Why do we resist this? I believe one of the reasons we resist this is we don't want to be naive. We don't want to be like Pollyanna, for those of you who remember that old movie. We don't want to be a fool. We don't want to think everything's nice when it's not nice. We're afraid that if I think things are nice, then I won't have any impetus to fix things. I won't have any impetus to action. But that's not a fact. We see the great devotees, Prabhupada would say, you do not know the Vaishnava. We see devotees like Arjuna, like Hanuman, like Srila Prabhupada, Bhakti Sananta Sarasvati. And they were dedicated to righting the wrongs of the world. They were very active. And yet they saw everything in their life as the mercy of the Lord. They saw everything as the kindness of the Lord. Of course, interesting, Srila Prabhupada, speaking about himself, he talked about how when his business failed, that at first he was thinking, I must have committed some offense, and Krishna's angry with me. I must have made some mistake, and Krishna's punishing me. He said, and then he read the verse where Krishna says, those who I favor, I take away their material opulence. And then he said, oh, now I could understand it was Krishna's favoring me. That story from Srila Prabhupada tells us that if we can't instantly understand how it's Krishna's kindness, then after some reflection and study of Shastra and consultation with others to come to that point, this is Krishna's friendship, this is Krishna's kindness. If Krishna's turned me aside from the way that I wanted to go, maybe it's because the bridge is out and I would have fallen off a cliff. Now, to see everything as Krishna's kindness not necessarily can be, but not necessarily in the sense of material good and bad. Not necessarily that, oh, this so-called bad thing has happened to me. That's because Krishna's arranging something materially, externally better. Maybe. But to see everything as good in the sense of transcendentally good. Everything that Krishna is arranging in my life, everything that's happening to me, Krishna is using. Whether what's happening to me is due to my foolishness. In one sense, if we're conditioned souls, everything that's happening is due to our foolishness, because we wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for our foolishness. But Krishna is arranging everything in order to bring me to ultimate, unlimited happiness and satisfaction. Everything to what I really want. In that way, everything is part of Krishna's kindness. He is my friend. To really meditate on how Krishna is my friend. Now, one of the most painful things when you're taking care of a subordinate is when that subordinate sees your actions as being cruel rather than kind. You know, you're trying to give some medicine to your child and the little child says, I hate you. Or you hate me. You don't love me. That's why you're giving me this medicine. It's very painful. It gives pain to the heart. You want, if you're doing something nice for somebody, you want it to be understood and recognized and appreciated. So Krishna also wants that. So we start with that. Then after I've started to recognize Krishna as a friend, then I can actually be a friend. This is one of the 9 processes of devotional service, to be Krishna's friend. Right, we have both going on in this verse. Right? Priya Priyatamasya. Krishna is the friend and Arjuna is Krishna's friend. So what does it mean to be a friend? We talked about, first of all, it means to appreciate your friend's friendship. But it also means to give friendship in return, to be the well-wisher of your friend. So what is Arjuna and Satyaki and Uddhava, what are they doing with all these gifts of the Lord, these pearls and these jewels and this gold? What are they doing with them? They're using them to please Krishna. Now that doesn't mean, especially they were Kshatriyas, that they were just living in a cardboard shack themselves. They were also living in great opulence, but they were using their opulence in Krishna's service. They were politicians. That was part of their service, to live in some situation where people would immediately tend to respect them and to follow them. So a friend uses the gifts of the friend in a way that will please the friend. So our friend Krishna has given each of us so many gifts. We have a certain amount of intelligence, a certain amount of talent, a certain amount of money, a certain amount of influence, some space we live in, some possessions. Those are all the gifts of our friend. We use it in such a way that he'll be happy with us. That's one way we show our friendship. We think about our friend. We remember our friend. Right? When, if I give someone a gift, I'm hoping that, first of all, that they enjoy the gift, that they like the gift, and also that using the gift brings some remembrance of me. I want my friends to think of me. I don't want them to forget me. I was speaking the other day to one devotee who's a traveling preacher, and I was talking about, okay, well, now I have an office in Hawaii. Should I stay here for a while and write, or should I get back on the road as soon as possible? And this other preacher said, well, the problem is, if you're not in a place for a while, everybody forgets about you. I'm thinking about that as an interesting reason for traveling. But it's a fact. You know, we want people to think of us. We want people to remember us. And if you don't see somebody for a while, you forget about them. Vishnumurti of the Bhaktivinoda Library Service was talking to me about book selling. And he said, it's the land of the living. He said, people buy books from those who are living and those who they regularly see. He said, once somebody has passed on, he said, except for Srila Prabhupada, he said, but generally once somebody has passed on, their book sales dwindle down to a trickle. Or once somebody's out of the public eye. And we feel bad about that. You know, we're all thinking about, oh, well, when I die, will I be remembered? And the truth is we probably won't be, at least not very long after we die. I made the point very often how many people know the names of their great-great-grandfather, even great-grandfather. I'm here with my grandchildren, and many of my grandchildren didn't know my parents. My parents died before they were born. Or if they remember them, it's just very slightly, and that memory will fade with age. So even their great-grandparents, they may not remember. What to speak of great-great? So none of my grandchildren have met my grandparents. So I was filling out a form yesterday to be able to access financial information online, and they were asking you for security questions. You know, you give a username and password, and then they give questions. So if you forget your password, you can, by answering the questions correctly, you can still gain access to the information. And a lot of the questions were things like, what's the name of your great-grandfather? You know, your father's father, your mother's mother, your mother's mother's mother. And I thought, God, I don't know. I don't know the names of my great-grandparents, or to speak of great-great-grandparents. So actually, most of us will not be remembered, even by immediate family members, but that's our desire. We have some desire like that, that people will remember me. They'll think of me, even when I'm not there, even when I'm not on the planet anymore. So Krishna also wants that we think of him, Manmana Bhava Madbhakto, that he's not just forgotten to us. Well, that's another way to be a friend, to think of him, to use things in a way that will please him, to think of him, and to think of him with affection. And then to do the work that he wants to be done, our preaching work that we do. I was reading a letter recently where Prabhupada said, yes, it is a fact that the preaching work we are doing is in the mood of the gopis, to bring everyone to Krishna. Those who are the most dear to Krishna, who have the deepest level of being dear to Krishna, they are trying to bring others to Krishna. That is what Krishna really wants, more than flowers, more than pacham pushpam pam tayam yomi bhakti prayatiti taraham bhakti paritam ashwami prayatma. Advaita Acharya was meditating on that verse when he was thinking, all I have to do is offer Krishna water and tulsi leaves. But more than that, Krishna wants the jivas. He wants the jivas to again be happy. And of course, the primary jiva that we want to offer to Krishna is ourselves. Prabhupada wrote to Rameshwar, he said, the highest principle is to save others, and higher than that is to save yourself. So this is how we really show Krishna that we are his friend. We see that everything he does is good for us. We appreciate what he does for us. We're grateful for what he does for us. We see his hand behind everything, and we see that it is a loving, soft hand. We use what he's given us in ways that will please him. We remember him. And we try to execute his mission to bring others closer to him and to bring ourselves closer to him. What he really wants is a loving relationship with us to be restored. So this way we can really be Krishna's friend. And if we are really Krishna's friend and recognize him as our friend, then our lives will be full of opulence. Not necessarily jewel-handled umbrellas, although perhaps, but the real opulence of prema, prema dhana, the wealth of love, of opulence so great that the devotees who have such opulence don't even care whether or not they have material opulence. Doesn't matter to them. Like Lord Shiva, who doesn't even care whether or not he has a house. Once at the request of his wife, he built a house. But then when the Brahmins came, he had to give them something in charity, and the only thing he had to give them was the house. So he gave away his house. And she never asked for another one. But our lives will be filled with so much wealth, so much opulence, so much beauty. Why? Because we've entered into the realm of our most dear friend. So that we can do at every moment, at least a little bit, we can strive to realize Krishna's friendship and be Krishna's friend. So, questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Hare Krishna. That should give us the faith to feel that way while we're in the middle of something.
Yes, definitely. Then you can see that Krishna is really your friend, and that everything in your life, you know, whether good or bad or however you judge it, you know, you accept it that way. And so therefore, if somehow or another good fortune comes to you, then you understand it's not you doing it, it's Krishna.
Yes.
Being your, you know... So you must use it in its service.
Yes. Anybody else? Hey, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you so much, Mother. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna.